Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. At least 108 journalists and media workers have been killed by Israeli strikes in Gaza since October 7th, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. The organization is also investigating reports that more than 50 media offices in Gaza have been damaged, leaving journalists with no safe place to do their jobs, as they also contend with extensive power and communications outages, food and water shortages, and fleeing with their families. On May 24th, the Paris-based Reporters Without Borders filed its third complaint with the International Criminal Court regarding Israeli war crimes against journalists. The complaint, quote, details 8 new cases of Palestinian journalists killed between December 20th and May 20th, as well as the case of a journalist who was injured. All concerned journalists were killed or injured in the course of their work. Reporters Without Borders has reasonable grounds for thinking that some of these journalists were deliberately killed and that the others were the victims of deliberate IDF attacks against civilians, end quote. So what is it like to bear witness and cover the devastating assault on Gaza? Mohammed Mawish is an award-winning Palestinian journalist from Gaza City. He has covered the assault for Al Jazeera, The Nation, and Plus 972 magazine. Mohammed Mawish is a contributor to the book A Land with a People, Palestinians and Jews Confront Zionism. He recently left Gaza with his family and now temporarily resides in Cairo. Hi, Mohammed. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be with you today.
Well, it's great to have you. Before we dive in and talk about the plight of journalists and the reporting that you did, I want to first ask you about what is happening in Gaza. People have been forced to move so many times to find a safe place to stay, even though by now we know that nowhere is safe in Gaza. In your recent piece for Plus 972 magazine called A Gaza Journalist's Agonizing Search for Safety, you write that for the past 7 months, Rafah has served as a refuge for over 1.4 million Palestinians fleeing from the north of the Strip by the orders of the Israeli military. But for the past month, since Israel forces have expanded their assault into Rafah, 63,000 people have stayed, but more than a million had to move again. So can you give us the latest?
The situation right now in Gaza City, whether it's in the north or the south, it's been really challenging and on so many levels. People in there are still trapped from the airstrikes that are occurring on a daily basis around the clock from the sea, from the air, and from the artillery fire that's positioned across a number of sites within the Gaza Strip. I mean, also, besides to displacement, there is also famine and malnutrition that have tighten their grab and leaving hundreds of thousands of families across the Gaza Strip in a desperate need for food and medical aid. And as those people attempt desperately and on a daily basis to flee also the bombing campaign that hasn't ceased since October. And the losses that these people continue to suffer and are still counting over the past 7 months are immeasurable. They do not only spent like for displacement and bombing, and they are not only reflecting homes and livelihoods, but also the dreams and aspirations of entire generations of Palestinians in Gaza right now. And it seems that the attention of the world and the media is turning away because, like, the world is turning on for its now, let's say, the ninth month. So journalists are being the only source of information while they are also being targeted across Gaza, as we are all familiar with the fact that there's only Palestinian journalists on the ground, but they have no comfort or any secure space for them to continue to report on what's happening in there, on what's being unfolded in the face of the civilians, in the face of Palestinians across Gaza. I mean, it's also the news that is basically mentioning people as statistics, but there is also a, like a hidden image of the suffering of the people in Gaza. And I'm speaking as a journalist and a civilian of Gaza City. I've seen it firsthand, where I spent the past months witnessing and documenting the unfolding tragedies of war. Like through my reporting and interviews with the residents from every part of Gaza, I have seen the harrowing and it's really devastating and tragic consequence that this toll has. Its prolonged bombardment, it has exacted on my people. Over the last seven agonizing months, let's say, of bloodshed and despair, the need for survival took precedence, so I had to leave with my family. But it continues over there, back home in Gaza, to unfold as tragically as never before. It continues despite the news of promising ceasefires. It continues to fail, where the people are left only to grapple with further loss, with further bombardment and tragic consequences of the Israeli attacks from the ground in Gaza.
Mohammed, what has it been like for you to cover so much death and destruction? On June 8th, you tweeted, "The scenes I am seeing coming out of Gaza's central areas are horrific and heartbreaking. The Israeli army is launching a surprise air, sea, and ground attack since early morning, leaving tens killed and injured now. Gaza's government media office said the massacre killed 210 people and wounded more than 400. So again, this was on June 8th. And then you tweeted, "I feel an uncontrollable need to cry. What I am seeing and reporting on is beyond any human comprehension or journalistic capability to absorb." So can you tell us more about what this has been like for you and other colleagues who've been covering this for so many months?
I mean, despite the fact that I have left Gaza, I am continuing to report on what's happening in there from a remote basis. And for me, as a Palestinian journalist, I would say that reporting on the war in Gaza hasn't only like been just a job. It's a national duty in the face of the overwhelming odds. I mean, continuing this endeavor is pretty much difficult for us as Palestinian journalists. We are faced from every corner with such overwhelming trauma and suffering. And the priority for many fellow colleagues and journalists in the ground in Gaza, including myself, has been to escape Gaza and simply survive. But when our cameras are shattered and we have to stop reporting and writing on what's happening, there is honestly no one left to capture the brutal reality of the aggressions and the attacks that the people continue to face in Gaza against them, as like they're very vulnerable population and they're being displaced one time after another. And when our voices are silenced, no one can hear our cries for help. I mean, let's say that in spite of like the never-ending hardship of the people in there, and in spite of the world's growing indifference, we cling to the hope that there should be justice and freedom for the people of Palestine and the Gaza Strip, particularly as we have been enduring the unseeable. We have been enduring what's beyond any capability for human beings in the world to absorb. And we are not only calling for a ceasefire right now. The people, I'm sure, in there are not only calling for a ceasefire and a stop for the madness that is unfolding, but also for an equal life, a normal life, and a just life, just like any other human being around the world. But it seems like I'm seeing now that the world's attention is turning away. Let's say that the international community seems to be growing increasingly indifferent. So that's how I describe my day during the massacre that has unfolded in the Nusayrat camp when the four Israeli hostages were rescued alive there. It caused the tragic death of over 200 Palestinians. And it's been painful to see how our identity has condemned us to disproportionate suffering and being treated as less than human by those beyond the borders.
Mohammed, can I ask you, how old are you?
I'm 25 now.
25. I ask because so many of the journalists who are covering this devastation are so young. And we should say that Israel is still not allowing anyone outside to go into Gaza. So international journalists cannot get in, even if a journalist is in Egypt or even Tel Aviv, they cannot get into Gaza. And I've heard some older war correspondents say, usually we're in for 2 weeks and then we need to leave to take a break. These young journalists are not leaving in many cases. And I just want to read one tweet from another young journalist, Hossam Shabbat. He is another journalist who's been reporting from Gaza, and he wrote recently, "The last time I saw my mother was almost 8 months ago. I decided to stay in the north to keep covering the news while my family evacuated to the south. We thought this would only last a few weeks. My mother left a 21-year-old eager to be a journalist, full of life. Little did I know that in those 8 months, I would age 100 years. I would not only be covering the news, but also digging mass graves, picking up decomposed bodies off the streets, going through starvation, and trying to console parents over their dead kids. Every day is a hunt for survival. I'm not who I was 8 months ago, and I'll never be the same." I mean, this is Hossam Shabbat, who's 21. Mohammed, you are 25. In one of the pieces you wrote about, Mara Mahdi, a 23-year-old Palestinian journalist who's been displaced so many times. I mean, yes. So many, you're all so young to be doing this kind of work and seeing so much devastation.
Exactly. You're true. I mean, like, since I was young, since I was born, I have borne witness to the unfolding of my family's dire circumstances under the military control of the Israeli occupation. And I have lost two aunts and an uncle, one by one, to disease. Let's say that was like a very personal, tragic memory. But I thought that we could have been afforded more time. But their sin of being Gazan men, they were not permitted to exit this land, to across, like, to go for the needed medications and treatment. So as Gazans, I think our reality as being isolated in a debilitating humanitarian crisis that pushes us further into de-development, especially in important sectors of life like healthcare and education, it makes us also stripped of the ability to seek external resources and support because, you know, like, medical referrals are tied to the political situation in Gaza. So yes, we are restricted in our ability also to travel within our own homeland. But this all is an ideal blend and a combination of trauma and suffering that leaves us with nothing but to voice the suffering of our people and of our own to the outside world. As a 25-year-old journalist, I mean, within the short span of like 7 years, let's say, I miraculously survived. This is the fifth war, destructive war. And I would say more than survive, I managed to find also life within the indescribable. But these years, let's say, have also burdened me with the loss of many beloved colleagues and close friends and like fellow journalists. And I have found myself constantly trying to reconcile all the different ways that heartbreak can manifest itself. So I think of all the lives that had hopes and dreams beyond the reality of their deaths, and I live for them. Despite how young we are, I mean, we as Gazans, we try and we do it very difficulty, in a very difficult and impossible ways to overcome the effort of our oppressor to turn us into a lifeless population. But right now, during this war, let's say that each massacre reinforces our unity, whether journalists, teachers, doctors, young people, children, fathers, mothers, we remain rooted in the same belief that sustains our elders who experienced the first and the second and the third, the ongoing dispossessions. And we are all connected in this struggle together because we are on the same land, whether within the fragmented parts of Palestine or in diaspora and exile. Because we are connected by identity, which is to seek freedom and liberation. Experiencing pains and loss is a daily occurrence in Gaza during this time. But it also instills our rootedness in the idea that we need to be alive, that we need to be able to report, to speak, and to live. And that's why I left. because I would wake up every morning faced with the worst version of the same challenges, and we once again start seeking the solutions. So I have to be able at least to survive in order to continue my journey and my messaging and delivering of the Palestinian message across the world. And that possibility seemed to be a little bit far from happening in Gaza since I was a target. Having the press vest was always like functioned as a red target. It wasn't any sort of protection. It didn't provide any privilege as of safety. Although we thought at least, and this is what we learned as journalists, that wearing the safety capacity and vests and helmets would protect you from the danger that they may unfold you. But in Gaza, it was a very different and very opposite situation. So we are trying on a daily basis to continue being the voice of the people over there, despite the same challenges that we are continuing to endure on a daily basis.
We're speaking with Mohammed Mawish, an award-winning 25-year-old Palestinian journalist from Gaza City. He's covered the assault for Al Jazeera, The Nation, and Plus 972 magazine. He's a contributor to the book, A Land with a People, Palestinians and Jews Confront Zionism. Mohammed Mawish recently left Gaza with his family and now temporarily resides in Cairo. In the piece you wrote for Plus 72 magazine last month called We've Shown Gaza's Suffering for Over 200 Days, Don't Look Away, you write that faced with such overwhelming trauma and suffering, the priority for many journalists, myself included, has been to escape Gaza and simply survive. But when our cameras are shattered, there's no one left to capture the brutal reality of Israel's aggression against a vulnerable population. And when our voices are silenced, no one can hear our cries for help. Do you have any sense at this point of how many reporters are in Gaza?
The possibility of being a reporter in Gaza has been rationed, to be honest, but I do not recall an exact statistic of the number of the people working as journalists from the ground, particularly in Gaza City, where I worked for Al Jazeera English. Speaking of myself, I was the only journalist that worked for Al Jazeera Digital in there. I was the only journalist who worked for Al Jazeera English from the north of Gaza during the past 7 months. So speaking of that possibility, it has become almost impossible for journalists to step from either the south of Gaza into the north, and particularly Gaza City, or from the outside into the Gaza Strip. So, and there was only a few other guys working for Al Jazeera Arabic as reporters for the TV side. And I can remember only a few other journalists who worked on a freelance basis for other international news magazines and agencies. But we did not make up the number of 10 over the past 7 months. And we ran from across the ground from one airstrike to another to cover the story, only to keep facing the losses and the tragic consequences that my people face and we as journalists are burdened with. So I remember at one time when I was writing a story shortly before I paused, I can remember this vividly because at that time I had to pause my writing and reporting to queue outside a bakery for 3 hours. I made it home before the bakery was bombed, which was a regular occurrence these days in Gaza. But I felt a world like burden upon me, thinking of all the people who lost their lives just because they kept standing in there. So I could have been the target. I could have been killed only because I wanted to seek some sort of life semblance, let's say, or seeking normalcy. So whether as a journalist or a resident of Gaza City, it is not only impossible to keep reporting, but also to keep surviving and living. Because in Gaza, like to survive means to live eternally with the traumatic aftermath of war and the miasma of death. And I think the term alive in our terminology doesn't necessarily mean being well and safe. It actually means anything but. Because I've seen it firsthand and experienced this more than once when a fellow journalist walked on a story to report or interview any people for it, only for them to become the story before they could file it or because they were in a position that was exposed to a drone fire or artillery strikes. So yeah, that was I think my recollection of how a daily life basis would be in Gaza right now. So it's becoming more difficult by the hour to report, to write, and also to be living and surviving what's happening in there.
Mohammed, I have been surprised that more international journalists have not done more to get inside of Gaza. And I'm wondering, is something happening that maybe is not getting media attention that we don't hear about? Are international journalists trying to get inside Gaza and we're just not hearing about it?
As a journalist from Gaza, I did not hear any attempts or calls for help from any other international journalists who were trying to enter Gaza and they were rejected. I mean, Israel, yes. Even long before the war started, international journalists had a very difficult job when they wanted to get into Gaza. But during this very circumstances, it's become incumbent upon these journalists to at least try. Because Palestinian journalists are falling a victim one after another for the strikes that they are trying to cover. And we didn't have any other supporting or assisting voice to be on the side of the story, so at least we can be able to deliver the message of the people from the ground. We've only been hearing stereotypical reporting about what's happening in Gaza in the mere mention of news and numbers and statistics, but none of these journalists would have wanted the opportunity to be able to stand.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, sorry, Mohammed. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mohammed.
I'm sorry. Yeah. As I was saying, like it's become unpredictable and it's become unbearable for journalists, whether international or Palestinians, but at least we've never been hearing any calls for help or any international support or assistance to help cover the situation and the war in Gaza from the ground of Gaza. So it's really saddening. It's really devastating to be facing that, but it is still a truth. So there is right now, I don't think there is any international journalist in Gaza at the moment, despite all the tragedies that are happening one day after another.
Mohammed, before we let you go, can you give us updates on how or if aid is getting in, given that the Rafah crossing, given what's happening at the Rafah crossing? Doctors Without Borders says its teams have been unable to bring any medical supplies into Gaza since the end of April. They say the closure of the Rafah border crossing following Israel's offensive in the south of Gaza in early May, coupled with the endless red tape imposed by Israeli authorities, have dramatically congested the flow of humanitarian aid. MSF warns that if the situation does not change, it may have to stop or drastically reduce some of its medical activities in the besieged strip. Do you have any updates on this?
Yes, since the closure of the Rafah crossing, it's been very challenging for any aid groups or humanitarian agencies to cross into Gaza. And it's been very rationed to the point that people are back to starvation and face malnutrition. It's like right now in the streets of Gaza, famine is a reality for nearly all the besieged population. Hunger has taken a very heavy toll on everyone, especially as businesses and banking services either destroyed or unable to operate. There is also no cash, no income, and little to nothing to meet the cost of feeding the starving families. So we are speaking about a debilitating crisis that goes deep and deep every day within the roots of the Gaza Strip. So it's a growing reality. Few supplies are left and malnutrition is growing. And the international aid that does make it in can barely meet the needs of a hungry population or prevent the situation from deteriorating. Since let's go back a little bit before the closure of the Rafah crossing, since the beginning of the Israeli ground offensive, many humanitarian agencies like the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, which is The UNRWA have halted operations in the north of Gaza, meaning hundreds of thousands of people cannot access any aid in the north of Gaza for almost 7 months. And as I'm telling you, like, the amounts of aid that do make it in have barely the ability or the capacity to feed any numbers or tens of thousands of people, while we still have over 800,000 people still residing in the north of Gaza. And like the continuous and the endless waves of bombing have destroyed Gaza's infrastructure and raising or shuttering the factories, producing and processing food. And as I'm seeing it right now closely by sources from the ground, it's about half the population of Gaza now faces daily shortages of bread and clean water and the basic ingredients for life. So speaking about in the eastern part of Gaza City, where canned goods were once processed and bakeries like seem to stand on every street, they are now simply destroyed. They're now piles of ashes, and they're now simply memories for the starving people. And there is also like a growing reality of disease for the people, with uncooked food is common. Parents are like families and parents are desperate to feed their starving children, feel they have like no option but to give them raw food and unclean drinking water, which is also a catastrophe in terms of what it causes to the kidney and to other parts of the body. So it is like a mix of let's say a very bad situation for every person still trying to survive in Gaza right now, whether in Rafah, in Deir el-Balah, where over a million people have fled the bombing and the ground airstrike and the ground offensive and the airstrikes from Rafah into that central area. It's even more challenging and conflicting.
Mohammed Mawish is an award-winning 25-year-old Palestinian journalist from Gaza City. He's covered the assault for Al Jazeera, The Nation, and Plus 972 magazine. He's a contributor to the book A Land with a People, Palestinians and Jews Confront Zionism. Mohammed recently left Gaza with his family and now temporarily resides in Cairo. Mohammed, thank you so much for joining us, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. You can learn more about Mohammed and read his articles and follow his work at yourcallradio.org. Coming up after a break, we'll discuss coverage of Supreme Court rulings and what is to come. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.